We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Fay. Back on the show, my guy, Jack Manuel. Jack, happy to have you back, especially when it's a Nets win over the Golden State Warriors, 134-117. How are we feeling?
Bruce Brown is the best center in the NBA.
I mean, he put up some good minutes tonight. You know, Bruce Brown was immense. There's a lot of different things. We'll talk about his game. But as always, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. Like I mentioned, Jack, dominant performance, and that's won 134-117. And pretty much after the second quarter, they never really looked back, and they controlled this game.
Yeah, the momentum that they brought, Nick, you could just sort of feel things clicking. There was a really good defensive tone to start the game. You know, they were really honed in on Steph, despite the fact that he had 10 points in the first quarter. I thought the Nets did a good job of defending him.
He really earned them.
Yeah, absolutely. Blitzing him. And look, he's a superstar. He's in the MVP conversation for a reason. The reason why the Golden State Warriors have been so great of late is because of Steph's just brilliance overall. But I thought that the looks that they gave, the communication was really good. You know, there was even a moment tonight, this is by Lucas Kaplan of Nets Republic, that we heard Joe Harris telling Harden to effing box. So I just I just think that the communication and confidence and cohesion of this team is continuing to grow, despite only getting 6.5 games together with that big three.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. I feel like they didn't necessarily play like their best game or their hardest game, but they just made a lot of smart plays and less of those kind of dumb things that we've seen across the season. You know, be it the turnovers in the backcourt, be it a ton of miscommunications defensively, especially on the stars, like you mentioned, on Steph Curry, a lot of great switches, put a lot of pressure on the rest of the Golden State Warriors to make shots, and they really couldn't. You know, some of that's Golden State having a bad shooting game, only 26% from three. But the guys who shot and missed are guys that typically miss. Other than Steph Curry being 2 of 9, and some credit goes to the Nets defense, a lot of the other guys typically have bad nights.
Yeah, definitely. And when Steph actually drove the ball and he got to his floater game, got to his layup package, you know, I think he only like missed one shot, if that, when he was shooting from two-point range. So, look, I think the Nets just did a good job of making things tough for him and Golden State. It seems to me that the game plan was really sound, and I've said that about Steve Nash in the past in terms of, like, okay, you know, inserting Bruce Brown into the starting lineup. You know, I think a lot of people were thinking Jeff Green would be the automatic starter there. But I think that playing Bruce Brown as a starter and just playing, you know, hyper small ball, obviously The Golden State Warriors are forced to do that as well in the absence of their centers. You know, they've got no bigs on the roster. Draymond Green, you know, is Draymond Green even taller than Joe Harris? I don't even know.
I feel like Eric Pascal is probably their biggest player right now, right?
Yeah, no. And look, Eric Pascal wasn't too bad, but I just thought that this game really suited the Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, if you want to go small ball, it's like going small ball against the Golden State Warriors of old. You're going to have to do it. And Kevin Durant is playing good defense. He's really improving. He's passing the ball like a madman. I just think that the Nets now have the new death lineup, the scary hours lineup, if you want to call it. I think that the starting five with Jeff Green tonight are six really good, really capable players. And I think the only question about it going forward is when they have to face the Milwaukee Bucks and or the Philadelphia 76ers in the playoffs. But the small ball, it forces other teams to adjust. But I just think that it's a really great weapon to have, Nick.
Yeah, and just to go back to the game plan real quick, Jack, Steph Curry, you mentioned he hit a lot of his two-point shots. It's because the Nets are really pressing him off that three-point line. Like, they had a strategy, which I wish a lot of teams have had in the past, where it's like, okay, Steph can get his twos because guess what? They're worth less than three. And, like, the way this guy hits threes, like, you just don't want him to get hot. But like you mentioned, you know, I thought the game plan was great. It helps that this is a good matchup for the Nets. Like you mentioned, they don't have any healthy bigs right now. Kevon Looney hurt, James Wiseman hurt, Marquese Chris hurt. So the biggest guy being Draymond Green, you know, KD looks like a legit center out there against a team like this. But like you said, you know, they forced the ball out of Steph Curry's hands, made other guys beat them, and played sound defensively. And I think also in the rebounding department, the fact that they don't have a good rebounder really helped the Nets. And you mentioned Bruce Brown being the starting lineup. I felt like he did a really good job setting the tone, especially on Steph, picking up him full court most of this game.
Yeah, Andrew Wiggins did that similarly to James Harden, and I thought that was a nice ploy as the Nets were sort of finding their groove and their offensive, you know, chemistry in the first sort of half. But yeah, Bruce Brown, I think, is just and look, I'm going to give credit as well to TLC tonight. I thought that when Bruce Brown was out of the game, TLC was the quote-unquote defensive stopper, sort of brought back that role that he brought from Trae Young in certain respects. I thought that his defense tonight, I think that, you know, playing that sort of role player, you know, we expect him to have a semblance of consistency. That's what we want out of him. That's what we want out of your role players. And I thought that in the minutes that he was out there against Stephen Curry and against those starters, I thought that he provided some value.
Yeah, he didn't make any of those terrible errors. You know what I mean? Like those plays that really stick up that are negative. And I thought he ran really well in transition. Like he really helped push the ball at different points.
He finished layups, Nick. He made a dunk.
He had a dunk. And I mean, it kind of made you upset thinking he could have done that against the Wizards a couple weeks ago. But, you know, credit to him, like you said, Jack, some nice minutes out there. But I want to go back to Bruce Brown. You know, really nice game, 18 points, 8 of 12, 7 rebounds. Just did a good job on Steph Curry.
Four offensive boards, Nick. He only had three defensive boards and four offensive boards.
I mean, he was fighting in there. I mean, there's a couple times where he probably could have got a loose ball foul that he didn't get. And I think, you know, we saw a lot of the scoring of him playing off the superstars. His cutting is immense. And it's not just the cutting. It's the intelligence of understanding, oh, Steph Curry wants to take a step towards Kevin Durant. I'm going to float to this spot right here where my teammate can actually hit me for the pass and where spot I feel comfortable making the shot. A lot of credit. He's a really, really good cutter, but just not for the fact of cutting, but all of the other intangible parts of it.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, around the rim, you know, he's an unstoppable force. You know, Draymond Green couldn't even guard him down there. And yeah, I think it was the angles that he was cutting towards Nick. You know, whether it was, you know, screening off of James Harden and getting him the switch, or you know, slipping the screen every now and then, cutting from the perimeter and the baseline. He's just a really, really smart, really clever player. And this was one of the best games that he has had as a Brooklyn Net. And yeah, only 22 minutes of action as well, 8 of 12 from the field. You know, he was leading the team in scoring at a point in time after the first quarter. And, you know, I think the stat that I got from Chris Mulholland was, you know, the Nets are 11-3 when Bruce Brown is in double digits, you know, make it 12-3 after tonight.
Yeah, no, really, really good game. And I think also, like you mentioned, Jack, he understands the angles and he's comfortable putting the ball on the ground for one dribble just to kind of get that little floater off. He doesn't need it necessarily to be that perfect layup. So he's just understanding his role in this team and how to play off superstars. And that's one of the most important things for a role player on a team like this.
What was your reaction, Nick? I sort of alluded to it earlier that, you know, it was a surprise to see him in the starting five and, you know, at the five. It's funny, looking on ESPN.com, he is listed as a shooting guard, but he's starting at the center position. Were you surprised to see him there over Jeff Green?
Maybe a touch, but given the matchup and Golden State's injuries, like you and I were kind of talking to the DMs, it was like, okay, this makes a lot of sense, and you have the opportunity to get your best perimeter defender in the game against a Stephen Curry. Okay, like, let's do this here. And worst case scenario, Jeff Green's an early sub. You know what I mean? So I liked it from Steve Nash. I thought it was the right move.
Yeah, I thought it was. I've said a lot of times, you know, for coaching and for whatever role, you know, you got to be proactive. And I thought this was a proactive move by being like, all right, you know, Bruce Brown is, you know, he's given James Harden fits in the past, and he gave Stephen Curry some fits tonight, even though, you know, he still had a decent enough night. Stephen Curry, he's a goddamn superstar. But yeah, Bruce Brown, you know, I've got that muscle meme saved of him and, you know, the dude dunking and walking through the door. And I'm going to use it pretty much every single game that Bruce Brown plays 20 minutes or more, because he's just a monster, a goddamn monster. And, you know, in this house and on the Brooklyn Buzz and all Nets fans, we stand for Bruce Brown.
Yeah, I mean, he's really kind of like that video, because he just uses his shoulders to create space and get his shot off. But Jack, who do you want to talk about next? You know, we had a lot of good games from a lot of players tonight.
Look, I think that it was intriguing, Nick, because there were waves of dominance from the three, from the Scary Hours Big Three, or the Notorious BI3, is the new nickname going around that I'm a big fan of. Replace the G with the number three. I thought Kevin Durant early looked rusty, and it reminded me of his previous comeback from the health and safety protocol, where that rust was there, because, you know, he's a guy that's coming off the Achilles injury, we know that, and still finding his bearings. And, you know, you need a solid 15 game stretch to be going, okay, I've got my flow here, I've got my reps, I know where the shot is, I know if it's short or short, I know where I can hit it. But then, like, he started poorly and he still finishes nigh on 50% from the field, 20 points, 6 dimes, 5 boards, 2 blocks, and 3 or 4 from the line. I just thought that he still finds a way to be just utterly dominant.
Yeah, and like you said, Jack, he looked a little rusty. I felt like maybe he was trying to force it against his former team a couple times, especially because they were sending so many doubles to him. I was just like, oh, let Kyrie and Harden do their thing, because they're not getting as much attention. And we saw Kyrie take advantage of that later in the game. But like you said, second half, he was great. You know, felt like he barely missed any shots. Defensively, he had a huge impact in this game. Feel like he frustrated Stephen Curry a couple times out there. I thought his weak side help at different points in this game was really good. And there was a couple plays, too, where he was rusty, and I thought some of that was defensively, and then missing some of the open threes that he typically hits. But a baseline of 20 points, 2 blocks, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 42% from the field, like, I'll take that all the time. Like, that's a bad game for Kevin Durant, and the Nets just won almost by 20.
Yeah, all of the Nets starters plus Jeff Green were in double digits, 14 points or more. You know, Joe Harris had 15 himself, and we alluded to Bruce Brown. But Nick, I'm going to be honest, I thought James Harden was the best Brooklyn Nets performer tonight.
I thought he, like you kind of mentioned, there was waves of Kevin Durant and waves of Kyrie Irving. It kind of felt like you felt James Harden throughout the game. And he really picked his moments. And I think the passing is really what popped. 16 assists. Like, that's a big number right there. And a couple guys were missing shots early, because I think the Nets started like 2 of 8 from three. And a couple of those were wide open threes. And James Harden had the 19 points. And it feels like those step backs are like placed in, where they're just like a dagger for the other team. It's like, oh, yeah, casually James Harden step back three. Now we're up 20.
We spoke about in the early iterations of James Harden's arrival to Brooklyn. It's just like, look, he's kind of feeling, he's like 2 of 6 from three here. You know, he's 1 of 3 there. But now that three ball is full and the step back is looking nice. 5 of 8 from the perimeter tonight. As you mentioned, Nick, the 16 assists. Also had 8 boards, 3 steals, 1 block. I thought his defense was quite good. I thought it played into his hands a lot as well. And he also did lead the team in plus minus with plus 28 to go with that 19 points. Yeah, his presence was felt from the minute that the ball was tipped right until the final whistle. He was incredible tonight, absolutely incredible. And I think that this is the best version of James Harden. This is better. Okay, I'm going to put it out there. This might be better than MVP version of James Harden, because that version of James Harden was the heliocentric, insane, innate-level scorer. We are now getting the best passer in the league, James Harden, combined with those step-back threes. And it's just like, what can you do? I also thought he did a good job. Like, I can't remember if I did tweet this out or if I DM'd you about it. I'm like, all right, look, The Nets need to start driving now. There's no one down there. And it seemed to me he was the one that set the tone initially from that point. It's just like, oh, James is going to do it. I think the rest of us can probably do that now. And you saw, you know, Bruce Brown get down there. You saw TLC, Joe Harris, Jeff Green, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. Everyone else started really attacking the paint and making Golden State really defend them from there. And I just think that it was an incredibly balanced performance from James Harden, and he might be playing the best basketball of his career. And that's a pretty high praise to say for a guy who's won an MVP and has been like the best scorer for the past, what, 8 years in this league?
Yeah, I mentioned the idea to you, I think, after the Bucks game, because it just felt like he's going to be playing the best basketball because there's more balance to his game, and it's impacting winning more instead of just being like, all right, you know, if he doesn't have his step back three, the Rockets are probably going to lose that game unless he got to the free throw line 20 times. Like you said, I thought driving tonight probably deserved a couple more free throws that he just didn't get in this game for whatever reason. But I really love the way he's playing and the feel he has for the team. And I think he's starting to build, you know, a little bit more confidence for what to do with the second unit out there. And he's starting to kind of get a feel for the guys. And I think another thing that's kind of obvious you'll see out there, he rather force it to like Jeff Green, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, or Joe Harris rather than pass it to TLC, I think. I think I've noticed a couple stretches where TLC's been open where he's just like, nah. So you can see where Harden has a little bit of bias and he's trying to kind of build a relationship with some of the players. And like we talked about, he doesn't even have a vertical spacer right now. He just has, you know, DeAndre, who's like 3/4 of a vertical spacer.
Yeah, and look, he's been showing some decent vertical spacing of late. I know
best game was against the Pacers this season. So.
Yeah, you and Corey covered that one in a nice crossover episode in depth, and that was a great episode. But yeah, I think that, you know, if you had have had, you know, Norvell Pell play some minutes tonight, I'm sure that he would have had at least 4 or 5 lobs. But yeah, I think that James Harden's passing, he's going to lead the league in assists, and it's incredible to me. This week, it seemed that like Kyrie Irving and James Harden were getting a lot of disrespect in terms of the all-star conversation. And it's just like, oh, Kyrie Irving, what is it? Is at the start? He missed a week of basketball, but he's averaging like 50, 40, 90 on a season where he's taking like ridiculous shots. And we'll get to him in a little bit. And then James Harden as well. You know, I remember Zach Lowe not having him as an all-star lock. And Zach Lowe is one of the smartest NBA people in the world. Not just like, you know, he is the person I look up to in any, I read all of his articles, I listen to all of his podcasts, but not having James Harden as an all-star lock just doesn't make sense, because it's just like, do you watch him play? That is one of the best 6 or 7 basketballers. On his day, he was the best player in a game that had Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. It was just like, I thought there was just some slight shade, and I wasn't there for it, Nick. I wasn't there for it.
Yeah, it is strange. I mean, it's a guy who's averaging like, what, 23, 24 points, and he's averaging like 11 or 12 assists, and the efficiency's not bad. And I thought like his defense in Brooklyn hasn't been terrible. Like, I think it's actually been okay. It's just kind of strange. It just seems like, it feels like the NBA is really weary of giving the Nets credit before they earn it. Like, they don't want to just be like, oh, this Brooklyn Nets team. But like, meanwhile, James Harden, like you said, has been an MVP before. He's been in the MVP conversation for, what, the last 5 years. And he's been an all-star the last 5 years. Kyrie's done the same thing in terms of the all-star stuff. And the efficiency is sky high. Like, if Steph, you know, like Steph Curry was shooting at this level of efficiency every movie, and we talked about him not getting in the All-Star game, it would be a joke. But like the fact that it's Kyrie Irving, it seems like it's okay. But like, no, 50, 40, 90 is literally ridiculous. I saw some stat is like based off the specific numbers he's averaging being at 25, like 5 and 5 or something. Only like Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, and Larry Bird had averaged those numbers on 50, 40, 90.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I put a tweet out the other day, like his true shooting percentage and any field goal percentage is like out of this world.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the shots that he takes, it's just like he shouldn't be that efficient. Like, just objectively speaking, the shots that Kyrie Irving takes, only Kyrie Irving can make. Like, yeah. Not even, it's weird. Like, in a game where you got Kevin Durant, you got Stephen Curry, and you got James Harden, only Kyrie Irving can make some certain shots. And some of the layups tonight, some of the step back three that you put out on Twitter, Nick, I was just like, dude, like, it's undefendable. Like, he might be as great and as diverse a shot maker, maybe than at that point guard position, maybe ever. And I saw Isaiah Thomas put out a pretty nice tweet sort of saying that the addition of James Harden has allowed Kyrie to be basically a shooting guard. And yep, sort of, you know, revert back to that role that we sort of saw somewhat in Cleveland, where LeBron James is the point forward. And I think that we saw what Kyrie Irving did in Cleveland, you know, being the number two fiddle next to LeBron James and hitting the dagger shot over, funnily enough, the Golden State Warriors and Stephen Curry. So, I mean, it seems to me that the chemistry is building, Nick. The habits are really starting to build. And I think it is starting. And the quality is just really starting to show and come to the fore.
Yeah, it feels like there's a balance from the players in the sense of, like, we heard James Harden say that being in Houston and having to score 40 points every night to win was fatiguing. And now his role is just kind of, he's still running the show, but his role in scoring is only 20 points a game. And now Kyrie doesn't have to play make and run the offense. He just has to be that scorer. And then also, he doesn't have to do it all the time because Kevin Durant's there. We also have an elite shooter in Joe Harris, some other good role players in this team. So Kyrie can really pick his spots where it's like, oh, yeah, like, I need to put up some points in the third quarter in the second half. I have this extra burst of energy, and now I'm going to hit you with five highlight scores in a matter of 5 minutes.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And that's really just like the game breaker for the Nets is all these guys can just kind of pick their spots because there's three of them.
Yeah, and like it's, you know, in every iteration of the big three, it's deflating because you think you've played quality defense and then you get Kyrie Irving with one of the most ridiculous layups you've ever seen. Yeah. Or you get Kevin Durant with just like a guy that just shoots over your head. Or you get James Harden with a step back three. Or you get James Harden with a drive and a kick out to Joe Harris for three, yep, who is wide open for some reason. Or you get Bruce Brown.
Or Jeff Green with some of these crazy finishes he has on the rolls.
The passing from James Harden to Jeff Green tonight and to Kevin Durant to basically everyone, like,
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
I'm not sure. Nick, I'll ask you, has James Harden elevated himself into the conversation with LeBron James and Nikola Jokic as one of the best passers in the league?
Yeah, I think he's probably been in that category for a while, but I think it's just natural you think so much of the scoring. But this has been a guy that we've talked about on, I think, more so the outlet and JBT of, like, he casually will make the pass in between someone's legs that everyone goes crazy about for Luka. Like, some of the passes he threw tonight, he threw a behind-the-back bounce pass to Bruce Brown under the rim for a layup, and that's going to probably be the 10th best highlight of the game. And no one's going to talk about it, but he does this casually on a regular basis. I think that's one of the most amazing things of watching James Harden every single night. Like, obviously, we watched him a ton before, but really seeing him, like, master the game. Like, it's more of a mental game for him than it is a physical game, because I think physically he's really confident with who he is. It's just like, okay, I'm going to manipulate you and get you to the spot I want you to be in, and it's going to either get my teammate open layup or it's going to get myself an easy shot.
I think intangibly, Nick, that might be the Kevin Durant effect. We sort of heard him whenever he speaks to pundits on whatever podcast, and he's really a basketball purist. He respects the game with such a high level, and it seems to me that we're getting that out of Kyrie Irving and a James Harden. You know, Kevin Durant said earlier on the Et Cetera's podcast this week that he wasn't worried about any of the Kyrie Irving talk because that dude just knows how to hoop. And, you know, James Harden, we're getting a purity to his game that we probably haven't seen from him in many a year. And look, it's hard to pick. Every single podcast, we're saturated with so many damn highlights that I think the James Harden, I can't remember if it was like one of the Jeff Green pick and roll passes or it was the Kevin Durant, like, full, I think you put this on Twitter.
Yeah, the full court, that is nuts. Like, when that wasn't even like there, like, I mean, Van Gundy, obviously the broadcasting does do a great job, but Van Gundy was just like, oh, and then like it just flashed by and they didn't even run a replay of it. And I'm just like, yo, the difficulty of not only making that pass and then the fact Kevin Durant finished it with a layup for him running full speed. I was like, yo, how?
It's look, I'm going to give a football reference here, Nick. The Kansas City Chiefs could have used something like that on the couple of weeks ago.
Use a quarterback like that. But
absolutely. Nick, what was your favorite James Harden moment from tonight's game?
Yeah, I think it might be that one. I think it might be the full court pass. Like, that is just incredible. And it wasn't even like he got the rebound. And Jeff Green, it was either a rebound or a steal. Jeff Green got it, gave it to him, and they just dished it off instantly. It kind of reminded me of like what we typically see from LaMelo Ball a lot in Charlotte. Obviously, Harden's a better player, but LaMelo just makes these passes like soon as he touches the ball. That's kind of what James Harden did. He was like, give me the ball, boom, KD, touchdown.
Yeah, basically, it was incredible. And Kyrie Irving as well, we'll get to him, Nick. That pass to Bruce Brown that he got, you know, fouled on. I had people saying like that wasn't a good pass. I'm just like, it was a look away pass with his opposite hand. And I'm like, Kyrie Irving's best skill isn't his passing. But of late, I think ever since the finger injury, we're seeing a much more balanced game from him. And I'm not saying that either way, Kyrie Irving is brilliant. He is brilliant in so many different ways. And he might be the most entertaining player that I've ever seen. But that pass tonight from him was as good as any shot that he made.
Yeah, I think he's better as a, we've said this a million times probably, he's better as a secondary playmaker. You know, like the secondary creation where he's not running the offense to do it, but if there's an open guy, he's going to hit them. Especially in the corners, I think he's getting more comfortable there. I think my favorite was the step back three because I think they brought up on the broadcast, he stepped back like 3 or 4 feet. Like, he created a lot of space, and it's always nice hitting step back three against Steph Curry. Obviously, we know Kyrie gets up for these games a little bit more.
I think the Nets do in general, you know.
Yeah.
They're, what, 7-1?
National
and one,
TV
nine,
Nets.
National
and NBA TV,
TV
doesn't count.
What are they, 7-1 or 9-1? I can't remember. StatMuse put out the tweet that against plus 500 teams. We know all about that. We know all about that. But yeah, look, Kyrie Irving was incredible tonight. 23 points, 10 of 17 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3, had 4 dimes as well, 5 rebounds and 2 offensive boards, Nick. I thought in the first half where, you know, he wasn't necessarily just getting the shots because it was the Bruce Brown show in the first quarter and a half. He was just fighting and doing a lot of these really gritty things. And I'm just like, okay, Kyle, you do you, mate.
Yeah, I think like it's, when you're so used to touching the ball a lot and you don't get to touch it, the only way you can get to is get offensive rebounds. And if it's not your man and it's not your responsibility in transition, dive in there real quick and try to get a tip pass. Like I said, I think these guys just have so much more energy. You know what I mean? Like, you're playing with 3 stars. It's just so much easier. I mean, like, you play basketball, Jack, and like if you play a game of 3-on-3 and you're the best player and you have to score every single time, you're shot. When I play 3-on-3 and I have like other good teammates and I don't have to necessarily score every play, now you're having so much more energy on both sides of the ball and you're able to cut, move off ball, screen, and do some of these things that you just never really did.
Yeah, I basically play like Bruce Brown without the insane deltoids and biceps that man has. I love my screen, I love my cutting, love making other people look good out there. But yeah, Nick, I wanted to ask you, I guess, about Kyrie Irving. We saw him before the game throwing some dunks down, some really nice tweets on Nets Twitter about
that. I didn't see that. I didn't know he was throwing down dunks. I just got to the game right like before it started.
Yeah, like him, and I was just obviously... We're both very much tuned in with Nets Twitter. Do you think Kyrie Irving is underrated as an athlete? And I guess I ask this in relation to, obviously, you know, the rebounding, you know, from tonight as well, just being the ability to have a little bit of hops here and there. And obviously his layout package and his ability to just jump and that step back as well takes an immense amount of athleticism to just go all the way back, like, what, 4 feet, 5 feet or whatever the heck it was. Is he underrated as an athlete?
Yeah, I think it's been brought up. I think Dave DeForest brought this up a lot, that Kyrie's come into this season in like some of the best shape of his career. And I think that helps in making you look maybe a little bit quicker. I think he's not a great vertical leaper. Like, he's not going to be a Russell Westbrook in his prime or anything like that. But I think the fact that he's not, people underestimate his quickness and his speed and his burst, his ability to change direction. Like, everything under the rim, he's almost an elite athlete. It's more so he just doesn't have the elite jumping. You know, he doesn't have the explosiveness. And some players are a little wary of that in general, just because, like, the higher you are in the air, the harder you're going to fall, and the more likely you are to suffer an injury. I mean, he does have pretty good hang time with some of these under-the-scoop layups.
Yeah, big time. It's some of those laps, man. They never get old. They really never get old.
The one on Draymond was pretty sick.
That was filthy. Absolutely disgusting. Like, NSFW. I might have to add that to my OnlyFans.
Might need to add it to your Twitter bio after tonight's Twitter performance.
Yeah, man. Look, I don't know. I was a bit thirsty tonight. I got my water, but I'm a little bit dehydrated with that. And I guess it's a nice little segue to
Jack. You were missing the buzz.
Missing the buzz. Thirsty for the mic, and certainly thirsty for Joe Harris. Nick, 15 points for Joey Buckus, 3-6 from 3, 5-9 from the field. Had a couple of free throws that he made. You know, he's improving on the free throws. And 4 boards, 2 steals, a block as well. Joe Harris looks like he belongs. And that's just something that you wouldn't have thought. And I remember Kyrie Irving sort of saying this at the early points of the season. He's like, you know, he used to be like, you know, Joe Harris, the guy who would like kind of be there in Cleveland or whatever. But now it's just like, Joe Harris is a dude.
Yeah. He talked about him having the tat now, the curly hair, the beard sometimes. You know, he's got the swag. I think one thing with Joe's game is like, we didn't really question the offense. You know, he's taking a jump. I think it's a 3-point shooter, shooting a little bit more contested, getting a little more comfortable with a step back or the dribble
the
or whatever.
Step back, but I wanted to mention, Nick. Like, there's not like an immense amount of like craftiness and athleticism like he's Stephen Curry with a dribble behind the back. But he knows someone's closing out and hardening him. So he's like, I'm on dribble to the side. I'm going to hit this 3. And like, that to me is an increase in his 3-point shooting propensity. Like, his diversity in shot making is not only increasing as like a mid-range shooter, as around the rim, but as a 3-point shooter, like, you know, contested ones, as you alluded to, and those off the dribble ones, step backs, sidestep ones. Joe Harris wasn't hitting those 2 seasons ago.
Yeah, and I think what it does is it puts a lot of pressure on the defense. And like you said, he's just a little bit more versatile when he receives the ball in the catch and shoot opportunity. Is he going to shoot it? Is he going to sidestep? Is he going to drive to the rim? Is he going to pull up from mid-range? Like, now he has counters to the how you're going to play him, where in the past, we go all the way back to the Philadelphia playoff series, he had no counters. He was running off screens, and if he couldn't get free, he wasn't going to get shots off. And he's a different guy now. And I think defensively, he's getting a little bit more comfortable with the switching. He's flashing out a little bit quicker, especially when it's like Stephen Curry and stuff, where I think times in the past, he's maybe been a step slow. So his understanding, getting a little bit more comfortable and also communicating with his teammates has been big.
Definitely. Absolutely. And Bruce Brown alluded to, I guess, the defensive side of the ball. And he said the Nets, and this is by Matt Brooks, the Nets were locked in at shoot around and knew their game plan. Says that's the reason that the switching was so good. You could certainly tell that there was a level of just switched onness, for lack of a better term. You know, the communication and the execution on the switches. You know, there was probably, you know, most of the game, it's double-digit amount of time where it's just like, oh, come on, guys. You know, you got to be able to hit that switch quicker and crispier. Whereas it's probably only like 2 or 3 times this game where it's just like, oh, Kai, what are you doing there? Oh, Jimmy, James, what are you doing there? So I think that was a really positive point.
Yeah, I think the switching you saw step up tonight. I think at other points, there was times where, hey, you need to give Kyrie help in the post against, you know, a bigger defender or against other teams who are going to be able to exploit things. But it's obviously progress, and that's what we're looking for. And we know the Nets don't necessarily even have to be an elite defensive team. They just have to really be solid because their offense is just that efficient, and they're going to blow out most teams on a regular basis. So if they can get the defense to being competent, which it was tonight, and, you know, they did get a little bit of gift from Golden State shooting 20% from 3, but I thought they did a good enough job with the level of offense they have that they would beat most teams in the league tonight.
Yeah, and in saying that, the Warriors haven't been a good 3-point shooting team this season. Yeah. It's been Stephen Curry, and Stephen Curry's gravity normally opens up shots for Kelly Oubre or Damian Lee or these sort of guys. And I think that the fact that Steph wasn't able to bring... Stephen Curry threes are like shots that we alluded to earlier. You know, Kevin Durant step backs, Kyrie Irving step back threes and layups, James Harden step back threes. Those are threes that are like almost worth like an extra half point because they just give the team a little bit extra energy. The bench lifts a little bit.
Deflation for the other team too.
Absolutely. We saw it was pretty deflating for Klay Thompson on the bench in his... I mean, Clay's normally like a quite a well-dressed fellow, but the old Flanny, it's just like, feels like he forgot and he wore his like pajamas to the game, but massive Klay Thompson fan.
He was pissed. He was throwing stuff on the sidelines. You see that?
Yeah. And look, I think that he's a competitor. And I think similarly, he's just sort of like, I was in what the Brooklyn Nets are in right now. You know, the big three, you know, one of the most successful teams in the history of the game. Now, the Brooklyn Nets have a ways to go until they're even in the same breath as the Golden State Warriors of old. But they are doing the right things and certainly on the right track. And Kyrie Irving has a nice quote, Nick. I just wanted to throw at you from Matt Brooks. He said this to James Harden. I just looked at him and said, "You're the point guard and I'm the shooting guard." And he said that it's really fun. I'm just like, it seems to me that there is one of my favorite moments in this season, Nick, and I love all the off-the-court stuff and, you know, Kevin Durant saying Nets world, and also James Harden, welcome back to Kyrie Irving or whatever. And, you know, we said the Kyrie Irving's, you know, was a little bit off in those Cleveland performances. But it seems to me that there is just a joy to the way the Nets are playing. And I think that it really comes from, and it set the tone from, you know, Kevin Durant. It set the tone from the leaders. And just, there's a vibe, Nick. There's a vibe in Brooklyn right now.
Well, we got Kyrie's next quote, and it's, "I think I've been waiting for the opportunity, playing to other great players, doing the little things to win. That's all I'm focused on." So that kind of fits exactly with what you just said, Jack. You know, he's happy to be here, happy to play with these guys, and it's fun basketball. I mean, like, beating a team by double digits in a game which is supposed to be relatively close is good. You know, you're going to have a good time doing that, especially when it's like I said, like, there's not a giant burden on any specific player because there's three of them and there's other good players in this team where they can kind of have almost easier nights in games where in the past for them to have this type of game, this type of win, it would require a huge effort from them.
How do you think the people in maybe, I don't know, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, the concept of time has been lost in the past 12 to 18 months now. How do you think the people that were saying the trade Kyrie Irving Brigade, how do you think those guys and gals are feeling right now?
Yeah, they're probably going to say, wait until Kyrie has something go wrong, blah, 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 and talk negative. But I mean, I think even anybody who is a Kyrie hater going to the season, he's statistically having his best season. You know what I mean? The efficiency is crazy, and he's in a perfect role for himself, where, like we talked about, he doesn't even really have to run the offense much at all, except maybe if he's out there with the second unit, because Kevin Durant, when he's out there with Kyrie, is taking off some of that burden. So it's just like, Kyrie can just go out there and play basketball how he naturally wants to. And really, we've talked about it, it's leaning towards scoring. So he's living his best basketball life right now.
He really is. It's a joy to watch. You know, he brings joy to the game of basketball. And, you know, in a year and in 18 months that have lacked, you know, that tangible joy we've been able to experience in person. And look, all kudos to the people that are hopefully being safe and wearing their masks when they get to go watch the Nets play. I think it's the Kings on February 23, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, I think so.
Yep. So, look, I'm incredibly jealous. I'd give up a goddamn limb to be there to see Scary Hours in person. But hopefully, come the end of the season, this vaccine is kicking on, I'm allowed to get on a plane, and I'd give up my entire savings to see just one game of these three, because, you know, I would have memories of plenty. I have memories of plenty just watching them play on the television and then recapping the podcast.
It's just a joy to watch this team play every night. Like, I think a lot of fans, and obviously I know people have said that we're a little bit too optimistic or pro Nets, but like, there's literally three Hall of Fame players on this team. And the opportunity in terms of like which you'll see three Hall of Fame players playing your team at any single point when they're all in their primes is highly unlikely. Like, it happens once maybe for every team. If you're the Lakers, it maybe happens a little bit more. But like, in general, for the Nets to ever get this much talent on the roster again is going to be highly unlikely, unless Sean Marks is really as crazy as we think he is. But still, like, just everything lined up so perfectly for the Nets to have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. Obviously, the roster isn't super complete, but just watching those three individuals play on a regular basis, it's, you know, somewhat historical to an extent for Nets history.
Stop being a cheerleader, Nick. Come on, mate. You know, we're gonna improve our cheerleader tendencies on this podcast. Look, I agree with you. You know, Bruce Brown, Joe Harris, Jeff Green, Hall of Famers right there. You know, it's a goddamn pleasure. No, look, in saying that, I think that we've been doing this podcast for a couple of years now, and, you know, we always get a little bit existential every now and then, and, you know, you don't want to take things for granted, you know, whether the Nets win a championship, whether they don't win a championship. I think it's this whole, and not to go beyond basketball, we are a basketball podcast, but I think that you learn to just savor the things and be present and enjoy watching Kyrie Irving play. Enjoy talking about this team. But just take being in the moment, being mindful, being present and going, man, this is just fun, man. Let's enjoy this one game at a time. Let's enjoy this West Coast road trip. It's only going to get tougher. Overall, Nick, you know, we were chatting about this in the DMs and I wanted to bring it to the pod. Where does this game, where does this win rank for you overall this season? Obviously, the Nets are now 15-12. They're inching closer to that second seed and hopefully that first seed at some point in time. There's been a lot of good wins this season that we've recapped and you've recapped as well. Where does it rank overall?
16-12, Jack. Just, you know, give the Nets that
extra. My bad. ESPN hasn't updated it yet.
But I would say top five. You know, second time they blew out the Warriors this season, so that's kind of cool to put out there. For me, I really like the Clippers win. I kind of mentioned that in the DMs just because I felt like the Nets and the Clippers both played really good games, and the better team won, and that kind of gave you more confidence moving forward for who they could be. Where I kind of mentioned to you, like, this win is good, and obviously we see the big three, and it's a blowout performance against a team that's been playing pretty well. But the Warriors have their deficiencies, and I think there's some areas in which, like, the Nets were able to really exploit, and the Warriors weren't really able to exploit any of the Nets' weaknesses with this matchup. So I think looking at it objectively, it's great to have the win against a good team. But when you look at the matchups, I think it has a little, maybe a little bit less value than some of the other wins.
Yeah, I guess I'll have a top three then in saying that. I think Clippers, Bucks, and this one.
Yep.
In some modicum of order. I just think that this win was a really complete team basketball performance.
Yep.
And look, the Milwaukee Bucks game, you know, there wasn't even a Kyrie Irving playing. The Clippers game, you know, Kyrie Irving's wizardry got us over the line. I also do think that we match up kind of well with the Clippers because they're a team that doesn't attack the paint, which is why I'm incredibly intrigued to see how we go against the best team in the league or one of the best teams in the league. We've already beat the Utah Jazz by like, what, 30 points? And they had all their superstars, but they're like 17-1. And every time I hear that, I'm like, I know who that one is. And it was without all our superstars, funnily enough, too. But yeah, this West Coast road trip is going to be a massive test, Nick. Yeah.
It really is, Jack. I mean, you mentioned it, going against the Lakers, facing the Clippers again, even the Suns. You know, the Suns coming up are a really good team. Sacramento's been playing some of their best basketball. Your boy De'Aaron Fox is having a great season. but, you know, this is going to be a fun West Coast trip. I think the Nets know it's a real opportunity for them to kind of push forward. But I just want to talk about one more player from tonight, Jack. Jeff Green. You know, I thought he really was good tonight. We mentioned some of those roles he had to the rim. Finished 5-6, 1-1 from three. His switchability, even his ability to switch on to Steph Curry and not get cooked. Like, I think that's just incredible. And this is a guy, we've said it about 37 times this season, that's on veteran minimum contract. It's just crazy that the Nets have this player on the roster because they'd be in big trouble if they didn't have him.
Yeah, he almost murdered someone as well. With lucky that he got fouled in that poster because he would have had his second massive poster for the season. You know, I'm going to start calling Jeff Green Benjamin Button. Because this man is going backwards in the age. Like, he might be playing the best basketball of his career. Now, he's played for 9-10 different teams. I haven't followed him incredibly closely. You know, he provided some good value for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Obviously, in Boston was probably where he played his best basketball. I can't really go back any further than that. Obviously, Seattle. This is why he's a part of the reason why he's here. It was a really cool story that the Glue guys had with him. Talking about how they made the infamous. It's a really funny video with James Harden, with Kevin Durant. Look, he provides everything to this team. You know, he is the reason why we can play such the switching style system and execute it. And, you know, Jeff Green was on the mic a little bit. We saw and heard from him. And he's just a really stabilizer. He makes everything work. And he is the reason why the defense is continuing to improve. He's the reason why that the spacing works. He's the reason why he's a big reason for the Brooklyn Nets' success.
And he's a big leader on the team. He called out the team after the loss to Detroit Pistons and talked about, you know, having pride. And I think Joe Harris said it, you know, after the win the other night, was saying, like, you know, Jeff Green didn't necessarily say a ton, but what he said meant a lot to us. And the team reacted, you know, against the Pacers. They had a solid defensive performance tonight. So I think they're realizing and understanding the situation a little bit more, getting some of that cohesion, which has been noted a lot this week. The Nets haven't necessarily practiced a ton since the James Harden trade. Some of that being an older team, some of the probably coaching philosophy, but a lot of it just being the schedule and playing so many games in such a short period of time. But, Jack, what did you think of Tyler Johnson tonight? I thought he brought some good energy.
Yeah, I thought that he might have been the outside of Jeff Green, the Nets' best bench player. I thought that he looked good from the corners, and you know he's pesky. I think that Sixers game, you know, he started to work into some form, and you know I think that it wasn't the best matchup. But in saying that, you know, I think that he is trying to vie. You know, he is out there to go, look, I want to extend my NBA career. I want to provide some meaningful minutes to this team. And when Landry Shamet isn't hitting his shots, and when TLC is doing, you know, the TLC negative things that we don't like from him, you know, Tyler Johnson provides a bit more of a steadiness. And I think that that's the, you know, being around the wings and having that experience, you know, he could provide some value for this team, you know, whether it's as a ninth man in the rotation or whatever, you know, he's certainly putting his name up there.
Yeah, I like the energy he brings. Like you said, Jack, pesky, almost kind of gives you like a light version of Bruce Brown in terms of the defense, just like chasing you. He doesn't play up to that level, but it brings that type of energy and effort. And if he can knock down the threes in the corner, that's good enough for him to get some minutes. And I think he also has a better understanding of like who he is on this team. Like, you know what I mean? He just kind of sits in the corner and does all the small things, and that's fine. And that's how he's going to stay in the NBA, and he's going to get minutes.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that he does well also, one thing he did well tonight anyway, was, you know, setting screens to get Harden or Kyrie or KD the mismatch. And, you know, when he didn't do that, he would set another screen, or he would just fly to the corner to try and drag his man away from him, with him, sorry. So I think that that's a really, you know, a heady sort of play that, you know, he's doing. I think screening is a nice little thing that Bruce Brown's obviously done incredibly well, and the reason why he's having so much success with this team. So yeah, Tyler Johnson continues to do some good things. I think this is a matchup that worked well for him as well. Mm-hmm. There's a much smaller team, and Tyler Johnson is, you know, maybe a 6'2", 6'3", sort of dude. So he's going to probably struggle against teams like the Bucks, like the Sixers, and maybe even the Lakers. So, you know, when you need him in the regular season, your role players can step up and provide you some meaningful production. It was good to see Tyler Johnson do that tonight.
Yeah, 100%. Landry Shamet, I thought he had some good moments in this game. Obviously, he's always going to look better the nights he hits his three ball. But I didn't think it was a bad performance. Not anything crazy either, though.
Four assists for him, and I think that, you know, it was a prototype of the system tonight, Nick. I thought the ball movement was absolutely incredible tonight. 35 assists on 50 made field goals. I think that James Harden really set the tone there, and everyone's.
I wonder if that's a season high.
It'd be interesting to dive deep into the stats, and, you know, at the JMAJBT, at OTG Nick, if you want to let us know. But yeah, 35 assists. I thought that the ball movement, it was, you know, sometimes when you have three incredible isolation superstars, guys that can get their own shot by themselves with or without a screen, you know, you get bogged down. And we heard Kevin Durant say to Rachel Nichols after the game that it's just like, you know, if we keep those assist numbers up and keep the turnovers at a reasonable number, and I think they're only, 13 tonight, same number as Golden State. I think that that's something that is going to be where the Nets are really, really dangerous, because as I've always said, I love ball movement. I know you love ball movement, because it's harder to defend a ball that is in motion. And it opens up spaces and gaps for the likes of Bruce Brown, for the likes of Joe Harris on the perimeter. It makes it easy for the role players too.
Yeah, it makes everyone feel involved, and it's more so the players are playing off each other. Obviously, there's going to be the isolation possessions on certain, you know, plays or late in the game, but get your easy offense, take advantage of the opportunity of playing with other superstars or other great shooters or whatever it might be, and playing off your teammates. And when they do that, that's when the offense just really can't be stopped. When they're gelling, moving the ball, cutting, great ball movement, off-ball movement, hitting their shots, like, there's not a better offense in the league, and there's not many. If they actually hit their potential, there won't be many better offenses in NBA history.
It's already the case, Nick. You know, even when the Nets were struggling defensively, this tonight was it the best offensive performance of the season, do you reckon, Nick? You know,
score, I think, 147 against OKC without Kevin Durant.
I agree. It just seemed to me that there was just, and I alluded to, obviously, every single meaningful player tonight for the Nets scored 14 points or more. And it was just a really even performance. I thought that this was the Brooklyn Nets at their best. And that third quarter where they scored 42 points as well, 37 in the first. And the 37 points seemed to come incredibly just like, almost like a grind and gritty. And it was nice to see that version of the Nets. And I alluded to, you know, Kyrie Irving's offensive rebounding, you know, Bruce Brown really leading the way. And when the superstars weren't able to sort of get the flow and sort of have their, you know, get into their groove a little bit, they were still able to score 37 points in a quarter.
Yeah, what I felt like in the first quarter was, like you said, it was grinded out, and then all of a sudden, a quick switch for the Nets, like, flipped, And all of a sudden, I think they ended the first quarter on a 15-4 run. Some of that was grinding out on defense, but also some of it is just like, oh, yeah, these guys started off 2-8. They're going to miss some shots. Boom. It can just happen that fast. And like you said, you saw like waves of that in the third quarter. And I think that's what's so scary for so many teams is like you really never know when a wave is coming from the Nets is because there's a superstar on the floor at all times, and there's a good chance there might be two. Sometimes there's going to be three.
Yeah, look, and there are a few teams, obviously, that can defend those three. We've seen a couple of them, and even those teams struggle too. You know, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Los Angeles Clippers. You know, the matchup that I think we're all looking forward to, Nick, is that Los Angeles Lakers one. I hope Anthony Davis is fit and healthy for it. I know that he's been struggling a little bit with some Achilles stuff. But, you know, the James Harden, as he said to the Nets media, you know, we've got to bring that same mentality to the Sacramento Kings, who have been playing some good basketball. And,
yeah.
Nick, De'Aaron Fox is balling out, my friend. You know, he's earning in that max contract. He's hitting the three ball. Who would have thought he'd hit that three ball with some consistency? I don't know.
You didn't say he was. You just told me I was wrong about the contract. So, and he's still got plenty of years on that. But save that for the outlet. It'll be interesting just to see because he's such a quick guard in terms of attacking the paint and even Sacramento in general in terms of like athleticism and getting a little bit more downhill. Where like sometimes I feel like the Nets do better against good teams. Obviously, they get up and they play more effort, but it's easier to understand who you need to stop. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you're playing the Bucks, like Middleton and Antetokounmpo are going to be your keys. Or you're playing the Clippers like Paul George and Kawhi, where sometimes when they play some of these bad teams, it's like anybody on the roster could drop 20 that night because there's not one player who's specifically better than the other. I feel like when they have the opportunity to game plan and there's issues with a specific team, it really allows them to excel. So I think the Kings matchup should be fun.
Yeah, I mean, Fox and Halliburton have been incredible.
Yeah.
You know, Buddy Hield is, you know, one of the league leaders in three-pointers made. And Harrison Barnes is I think, having a really underrated season. And, you know, Rashawn Holmes, I know you're a big fan, Nick. You know, if the Nets can't get DJ back by that point, hopefully everything is okay for him behind the scenes with the family issues and such. So if DJ isn't back, it'll be interesting to see. I want to see Bruce Brown stay in that starting lineup just because we saw what he did against Stephen Curry. And he can bring that same mentality. I think he has the athleticism, he has the physical tools, and he has the IQ and everything else to be able to make things tough for De'Aaron Fox as well.
Yeah, I think the thing for me would just be I wouldn't want to put that much pressure in terms of having KD going Holmes. You know what I mean? I feel like that's more of a true center where I might just put Jeff Green in there. I think, you know, Noah Vonleh could possibly have to get minutes in the next matchup or maybe even one against the Suns. If DeAndre isn't ready, hopefully he's good to go and it's nothing too serious for him. But I think Noah Vonleh, we saw him for a few minutes in the other game, looks a little rusty, as expected.
Yeah, as expected in that regard, Nick. Before we finish this one up, Nick, I wanted to talk about Spencer Dinwiddie and the rehab that he is currently enduring and going through. He's looking okay.
Yeah, I think, was Steve Nash asked about him before the game?
I can't remember. If you want to have a quick look at it, I'll provide a little bit of a spiel about, you know, he took the Instagram, posted, you know, some of the things that he's been doing, and on the post that got a lot of likes and got a lot of attention, he says, on the protocol, it says week 15, but it's only been 5. He's 10 weeks ahead of schedule in his recovery, and I saw, you know, Will Jackson, friend of the pod as well, put out the fact that, look, we know about the disabled player exception that doesn't prevent him from coming back. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie had a partial ACL tear, not a full ACL tear. So it's not the traditional one.
And no structural damage to the rest of his knee, which is usually the case when you have that injury.
Yep, and Will also made the good point of saying like it is generally easier, and the history has shown that guards do recover better and more quickly. And, you know, we see that in Zach LaVine right now, who is recovered from an ACL, and you wouldn't have even thought that he had that. You know, he's been incredible for the Bulls. But, yeah, Nick, I don't know. I didn't see anything regarding it, but I know that I'm incredibly intrigued by the fact that if he's 10 weeks ahead of schedule, then he might be back in May or something. We could see him at the end of the regular season. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But if there's a guy that could do it, then it's Iron Man himself.
Yeah, I mean, he's extremely lean, too. I would assume that helps. Like, not, I want to say Spencer's like 2% body fat, but I remember him tweeting something about it. And this is Steve Nash before the game via our boy Matt Brooks. Steve Nash says he doesn't want to put any expectations on Spencer Dinwiddie's return, says he's more focused on his long-term health, notes that KD had extra months to recuperate and how well that's worked. So it's like kind of pushing down expectations, but also, like you kind of mentioned, if he did come back at the end of May, Like, do the Nets actually have enough time to even incorporate him into the way they're playing? You know what I mean? Because they're such a great team already. It's not like you want to bring an injured player back necessarily for the playoffs. You know, obviously Spencer's a really good player, but you have no idea where he's going to be at. And typically not playing basketball for what it's going to be, not 6 months, it'll be like 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, and look, I guess in saying that, the immediate thought that comes into my mind is, okay, well, I'd rather a recovering Spencer Dinwiddie to be out there, or Tyler Johnson, Landry Shamet, or TLC. And there's a part of me that can't help but go, man, like, as much as we want our role players to contribute and have their consistency, just the mere presence of another ball handler, like, James Harden and Spencer Dinwiddie playing alongside each other, Spencer and Kyrie, we've seen in seasons past, and they've had some success. I don't know, man. I can't help but get a little bit excited.
Yeah, I mean, if he's medically cleared and everything's okay, I think even from a defensive perspective, he's probably an upgrade over Shamet, you know, upgrade over TLC. He's a 6'6". Like, he's lanky, too. You know what I mean? He has some true length to him where he can possibly defend small forward. So I wouldn't rule it out. I would just be worried about the reps. You know what I mean? And getting him comfortable. And even with his jumper, like, if he can get his three-point shot going and stuff, because at certain points where you're coming back from injury, teams don't really respect you. So it'd be important that he's healthy and feeling himself.
Absolutely. But nonetheless, it is still incredibly enthused. I'm enthused by the posts and the news that we're getting from Spencer Dinwiddie right now. And look, long-term health, I agree with Steve Nash in saying that as
especially
well.
Especially, I guess, contract year, player option.
Yeah, and like we've spoken about, or at least sometimes about, you know, teams wanting to acquire Spencer Dinwiddie. This could also be that as well. You know, him building back his health could be improving his trade value. Now, I'd much rather see him play for the Brooklyn Nets because, I don't know, there's a certain factor where it's just like, this guy has been part of the come-up, you know, like Joe Harris is, like Caris LeVert was, like Jared Allen was, and we've still got this guy on the roster, and it would just feel like this guy deserves to be part of that success because I think Spencer Dinwiddie, maybe more than any other guy, has given his heart and soul to Brooklyn, you know, as much as Caris and Jared Allen and Joe Harris and these guys have.
You can argue that Spencer is actually the biggest reason why they were put in that position because he had the most consistent impact on winning across the board. You know what I mean? Sometimes he was the best player. Sometimes he was the sixth man. But at the end of the day, he played the most games. And it sucks is the fact that he's injured for the biggest season. You know what I mean? Like, for the Nets, obviously there's opportunity he could come back. He could also be signed back with the Nets and be with them next year. So who knows? But Jack, anything else you want to touch on?
No, nah, mate, it's good to be back on the mic, and, you know, hopefully the sound quality at my new townhouse is okay. Hopefully it comes out nice and crispy for the listeners.
Yeah, it's also nice having comfortable wins, back-to-back, double-digit wins for the Nets. Hopefully it's something we can get used to. Jack, pleasure having you back. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. Catch us on all streaming platforms.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure four-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each four-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour four-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.